up, speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
Good morning and welcome to Speak Up for Monday, March 27th? Yeah, 27th. I know what day it is. I'm your host, Magnus Tiebold. You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM. And we got a great show for you this morning. We're going to start off with What's Up in Burnaby, your weekly roundup of news and happenings in Burnaby. And, of course, the big story there is what's happened with the planned waste facility for Fraser Foreshore Park. So we'll be talking about that. We'll also be talking about the start of a trial in the death of a Burnaby teen, and a fun production of Shrek put on by Burnaby North High School. So all that's coming up a little later in the program. We're going to be looking at Lyme and talking about brain retraining with Dr. Patrick Porter. So that sounds really interesting, all about neuroplasticity and how we can recover from injury and heal our brain. Really interesting stuff, important in so many different areas of life. We have some great music and the weather coming up in about 15 minutes and a lot more good stuff. But first, let's talk about what's happening in Burnaby. Let's talk about what's up in Burnaby. Joining me today is Srishti Gangdev of the Burnaby Beacon. Welcome to the show today.
Thanks for having me, as always.
So we're going to continue with a story we've been talking a whole lot about the last few weeks, the proposed green recycling and organics waste facility that was proposed to be in Burnaby's Fraser Foreshore Park last week. Well, we talked about it last week, how Burnaby Mayor had called a very short notice special meeting to take a look at this plan. And so what happened at the meeting?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a bit of a whirlwind meeting. And long story short, it's not going to be going forward at Fraser Foreshore Park. And council themselves say that the public should see this as a win. You know, it did come after weeks of advocacy and kind of pushing back on this from the public. There were petitions signed, lots of really outspoken opposition to this, and that was a direct contributing factor to council deciding that this is not the right location for this project. So good news for the people who really didn't want that parkland to be undedicated.
Yeah, in some ways you could almost, it's a bit of a win for everyone but the waste facility itself. You know, with the sort of rising tide of opposition, Burnaby Council sort of showed that they were listening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's good for democracy in general. I think that, you know, council can look at this project that previously all of them had supported and see that this isn't really what the city wants or what residents of the city want, and recognize that, you know, they're elected to represent those people. In terms of it being good news for or bad news for the waste facility itself, it does put it in a bit of a questionable position as to where they can go from here. Council is still dedicated, I think, to building the facility itself. They agree that it's good for Burnaby's climate goals. They agree that there's a lot of pros to the project itself. And now they're going to be looking for another place to put this. Preferably something on industrial or agricultural land. And there's not a whole lot of that left in Burnaby. So they're going back to the drawing board on where this could go.
Yeah, Mayor Hurley was commenting on that a little later in around midweek about just the challenges of finding a 20 or 21 acre parcel elsewhere in Burnaby.
Yeah, it sounds like they're going to have to go to the private market for that. And again, even on the private market, those parcels of land are hard to come by. So we'll have to keep an eye on this going forward and see how long this delays the project or if it really puts a wrench in it at all. What I found was interesting was that along with saying no to this project on parkland, the mayor at least has said, you know, he's heard the public loud and clear. He's not going to be supporting any future projects that would propose to remove parkland dedication, which means that, you know, hopefully going forward, we're going to be adding green space to Burnaby, which already has about 25% of our land is green space. And hopefully that goes up further in the years to come. There was also a lot of talk about the alternative approval process, which was, you know, we've talked about this a little bit on this show about how people felt that it was not really engaging the public in the way that it should.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, in many ways, there were really two big issues here. I mean, it started with the waste facility itself, but people also seem to be quite upset about the AAP.
That's right. And, you know, if you aren't fully caught up on that, you're not to blame, because it feels to the public like it's a bit of this obscure piece of legislation that allows cities to do things like this. But basically what it was, that you had to send in a form in paper, either in person or by mail, if you opposed this project. And the city said that it needed 10% of all eligible voters in the city to send this back, or they would be able to go ahead with the next steps of this project. So for residents who aren't really, you know, engaged on a daily basis in local politics, it felt like they were trying to push this through.
Yeah.
And that's something that came up in the special council meeting as well, where councillors, you know, heard that and said there was never an intention to sneak this past the electorate or anything like that. And in the future, if anything like this comes up again, I highly doubt that process will be used.
Yeah, I watched the meeting online. If people don't know, all the Burnaby Council meetings are streamed online. So if you're curious or want to follow up an issue, you can go to the Burnaby website and follow along. I think they have recordings there too, if you miss the riveting action. And almost every councillor spoke about both, you know, what they heard from their constituents about the waste facility and particularly the park removal, but also people's dissatisfaction with the AAP. And many of them sort of spoke about how they really would not be looking to that process again in any sort of similar situation.
Yeah, and I think it just speaks to, again, I think it was Councillor Calandino who said that this is a win for democracy and a win for the public. And I personally agree with that. You know, if council learns that on issues like this, people really do care, that's a win for everyone. Burnaby has this reputation of being a city that lets local politics issues kind of go by. They're not super rowdy at council meetings like you can see in places like Surrey or even Vancouver sometimes. You know, council halls are rarely packed with people. And it's just, for me as a journalist, it was gratifying to remember that people in this city really do care about what goes on.
You think, I mean, maybe it's too soon for this, but do you think Burnaby will be looking at different and new ways to engage the public on issues like this? Because one of the things I felt, you know, as an observer that was lacking is, you know, this came forward and then council voted on it, and there didn't seem to be any real mechanism for the public to speak their voice to it and let both council and other Burnaby residents know what they thought about it. Do you think there might be any movement to maybe reform that or create some new ways that people can get involved?
So on issues specifically regarding, you know, the removal of parkland dedication or things like that, they're a little bit bound by the province. There's only certain routes that the province allows them to take. They have to gain the approval of the electorate before they do anything like this. But there's only a few ways that they can do that. The alternative approval process is one of them. And the other big one would be going, like, having a full referendum. Which it seems like the majority of the population would support in a case like this. Not necessarily the question at hand, of course, but they would say this is an issue that needs to go to a full referendum. And that would be treated by the same rules as like a local election. It would involve really making sure that you're reaching out to the public to make the referendum mean something, I would say, because if you're only getting, again, less than 1 in 10 people coming out and voting yes or no, it's hard to gauge what people really think about this. But that, again, speaks to a larger issue of, do people really know what's going on in their city halls? And it's, you know, I would say it's a toss up.
Yeah. So this council is right at the beginning of its mandate. Do you think they've been hurt by this, or how do you think this is going to reflect on them going forward?
Yeah, we're not going to have another election until 2026. They were only elected last October. So it's hard to say, will people remember this in 3.5 years' time? Will they be that upset about it in 2026 that people will say like, no, I'm not voting for anyone who was on this council because of this issue 3.5 years ago? That, you know, council ultimately reversed their position on. It's hard to say. The memories of the public are really long on some things and really short-lived on others. So I'm not going to predict either way.
Well, I guess the next thing will, and it may take a while, we'll hear maybe what future plans are there for the facility. But it doesn't sound like it's going to be easy to in the short term anyway, find a way forward for that. It's going to be a bit of a long-term look for that.
Yeah, they're going to have to find that alternative piece of land. I know that staff is working on a report on what they kind of learned from this whole process. So we'll be following it like we have been for the past few weeks.
Great. So in another story, the long-delayed trial in one of Burnaby's most shocking and tragic murder cases is finally set to start next month. Tell me about the background to this case.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those cases that just, you think about it and you're like, how did this happen? It's been almost 6 years now since Marissa Shen, who was a 13-year-old who lived in South Burnaby, was found dead in Central Park. And her trial, or her accused murderer's trial, I should say, is finally beginning in the next couple of weeks here. It's been delayed, I think, 5 times by my count. Lots of pretrial applications that are all under publication ban. So we don't really actually know the reasons for all of these mm-hmm. delays. But, you know, I find this case really personal because I live in the same area that Marissa did. I love Central Park, and just I know that a lot of people in the community feel this way too, that it's really shocking that you have to connect such a beautiful area with such a horrible thing that happened. I don't know if you know much about the case.
Well, just, you know, following it in the media. I mean, I remember when it happened, and it was, like I say, it was pretty shocking. And, you know, as a parent, it seemed, you know, unthinkable.
Yeah. I'm really curious to see how this case proceeds. Like I said, it's been delayed 5 times by my count. Ibrahim Ali was only arrested a year after Marissa's death. So in 2018, I think. It was delayed because of the pandemic, and then it's faced repeated delays. And the BC Prosecution Services told me that it's due to these pretrial applications. And usually what's at hand there is questions of what could be admissible in court. Not necessarily every pretrial application would have to do with that, but that's a lot of the time what's at question. So we'll have to see in the next couple of weeks what exactly was holding this up. And the trial is expected to wrap up by the end of June.
I don't know if you know this, but with a lot of the pretrial motions being sort of sealed under a publication ban, would you expect much of the content of the trial to also be under ban, or do we just not know yet?
It's hard to say at the moment. It's a first degree murder trial involving a minor. So I would say that many things might be under a publication ban, but until we get to the courtroom doors and see what's posted on the walls, we won't really know.
Okay. So a little bit more of a happy story. A young teen cast from Burnaby High School, or Burnaby North High School, rather, is putting on an ambitious presentation of Shrek the Musical. That sounds really fun.
I put this on the docket for us to discuss today because I love Shrek. So I may be in the front row of this production. There's a group of, spunky young musical theater artists from Burnaby North getting ready to put on Shrek the Musical this week, actually, from March 29th to the 31st. And yeah, they're going to be on at Shadbolt Center for the Arts. And I think it's so fun to really support these young high school artists when they put on things like this.
Yeah, and the cast really is young. The young fellow playing Shrek is just in grade 9.
Yeah, and I was shocked to see that he wasn't even alive when Shrek came out, because I grew up on Shrek, and I took issue with his comment there of he didn't rewatch and psychoanalyze Shrek before while he was preparing for this. And I think Shrek is a work that really needs to be psychoanalyzed.
Well, this sounds really fun. Is the production open to the public?
It is, yeah. You can go onto the Shadbolt website and get tickets, I believe, and you can get them straight from the high school as well.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think it's going to be a good time.
I think so too. So what are the dates for that again?
March 29th to 31st, and they are all evening shows, I think. So it's 7 p.m.
Sounds like a blast. All right. Thank you, Shrishti.
Yeah.
Shrishti Gangdev, reporter for the Burnaby Beacon. How can people find out more about stories at the Burnaby Beacon?
Yeah. So please head to our website, burnabybeacon.com, and you can sign up for our newsletter there, and we'll send you all of this stuff into your email inbox in the morning. I'm also going to take a moment to plug our Burnaby Beacon Reader's Choice Awards.
Oh, good.
Because we're big foodies over at the Beacon. We love supporting the restaurants that, make this city such a fun place to live. So here's your chance as well. You can head to our website, click on the Reader's Choice Awards at the top there, and you just vote for your favorite restaurants in the city, whether that's favorite sushi or Indian food or pizza or what have you.
So the nominations are in, and now people can go and make their choices.
That's right. You have until April 12th to cast your votes.
Excellent. Well, I'll be going on there after this to cast my vote. Good. All right. Thank you so much, Shrishti, for talking to me this week. Shrishti Gangdev, reporter for the Burnaby Beacon. We will be back next Monday with more What's Up in Burnaby.
Yeah, we'll talk then.
Thank you. And What's Up in Burnaby comes to you every Monday at just after 10 o'clock as part of the Monday edition of Speak Up right here on CJSF 90.1 FM. A little music for you now. Jason Zimbano was the drummer and namesake member of Vancouver band Zimbano. Gosh, that was a long time ago that record came out. It must have been maybe even the 90s. Holy moly, I should look that up. He's got a new record out, and this track is called What's the Word? Thank you. Let's have a look at the weather coming up this week in Vancouver. Today's not too bad. Mix of sun and cloud with highs up to 10 degrees. There's actually a 30% chance of flurries over higher terrain this afternoon or late this morning, and then clearing in the afternoon with some wind in the afternoon. But the next 3 days are looking great. 3 days of sunshine and no clouds, highs up to the low teens. So that's for Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. Friday, things turn back to the usual seasonal weather with clouds and rain, but the temperatures are going to stay pretty mild at around 10 degrees, getting down to 4 overnight. So it's looking like a pretty good week. And, you know, we are, the sun is still out there in the evenings when most of us get off work. So great opportunity to get out for a walk if you're before dinner, or if you have the day off, get out and enjoy the sun.
This is Bird Note. Flitting from stem to stem, a yellow bird in a tiny black bandit mask sings with a voice many times his size. Common yellowthroats are one of the most abundant warblers in North America. They're adaptable birds, thriving in places that pickier warblers pass over. So it's easy to find yellowthroats in urban areas. Check for them in marshes, overgrown fields, and brushy areas along streams or trails. Many people remember the yellowthroat song pattern with the phrase, witchetty, witchetty, witchetty. During the breeding season, males may repeat the song an earworm-inducing 300 times an hour. Only adult males have those bandit masks, but females and young males have light brown backs and those signature bright yellow throats, which helps distinguish them from similar-looking warblers. To get a good look, you might have to look down rather than up. Yellowthroats spend most of their time among low-growing plants and shrub branches. There, they feast on insects and spiders on leaves and bark, or grab a snack from a fruit bush. Common yellowthroats are warblers that are skillful at living alongside people, making them a great introduction to the songs and bright colors of the warbler family. For Bird Note, I'm Ariana Rimmel.
And next up, our feature, looking at Lyme. Today, looking at Lyme talks to Dr. Patrick Porter, who is a researcher, educator, author, and creator of technologies that use light, sound, and other strategies to improve brain function and performance. He's written several books and really working with the idea of neuroplasticity. Here is looking at Lyme.
We used to believe that once our brains were fully developed, they were unable to change. Science is telling us that belief couldn't be further from the truth. Can technology enhance our brain's plasticity? Let's find out. Dr. Patrick Porter is a researcher, educator, author, and creator of technologies aimed at improving brain function. Over the last 3 decades, he has been on the cutting edge of brainwave entrainment technology. BrainTap is his latest creation, and it helps people achieve brain fitness, overcome stress, manage pain, enjoy superb sleep, and improve their lifestyle. I am so excited to welcome Dr. Patrick Porter to our podcast. He is one of my heroes.
Hello. Good to be here.
Let's start with the basics. What is neuroplasticity?
It's the brain's capacity to do work. They call it neuroplasticity because they now know the brain is more plastic than it is solid, and it's in the form of energy or ATP that can be measured. So the more ATP or the more energy in the brain, the more neuroplasticity we have, the more capability we have to process information.
And how did you become interested in this field?
Well, it all started with my father, who was a chronic alcoholic. He got help from some of the church members, came over and said, Michael, we're going to teach you how to relax. And that started my journey. And my father became a a Silva instructor, which is he would teach on the weekends how to relax and basically take back control of your life. So I grew up at seminars helping my father, and then kind of evolved. I went to school for electronics and then into psychology, and I got to marry those two by creating what I have now, the Brain Tap system.
That's amazing. What is brain entrainment specifically?
Well, give you an example. When we listen to music, we know that we relax, and they call this the Mozart effect. Our certain music actually can cause our hemispheres to balance and start working together in a more appropriate way and actually make us smarter. But what we've shown with music is once the music is off, the brain actually goes back to its original state. What we do is we add an algorithm in there. So we're entraining the brain to change its form and function, which means we're going to change the way it functions in a learning environment by increasing the amount of beta alpha signal so that they can have more focus and more concentration. And then once they're done with the training of any kind, you can do this through binaural beats, isochronic tones, through frequencies, through light. There's a lot of ways to do this entrainment. But once you're done, you should be able to measure it up to 72 hours afterwards and see an effect on the brain using QEG or heart rate variability.
Can you explain a bit of the brain tap technology for our listeners? I know you mentioned the binaural beats, and I know the technology also uses the lights in the eyes and in the ears.
So what we've done is I've taken ancient traditions and created this modern piece of technology. I'm just going to give an example. We use light in the eyes because the eyes control 30% of what we're hearing. That kind of blows some people away because when we close our eyes, our brain prepares for sleep. That's just a conditioned response. So in order to get more of the brain to function and to train the brain, we're going to emit light pulses. Your eyes are closed, but it's going to work with cranial nerve too. And it's going to work the same way as a binaural beat. And how that works, if I take a binaural beat and I want to get an alpha signal out of the brain, then I'm going to put in a 300 hertz frequency in one ear and a 310 hertz frequency in the other. The brain is actually going to only hear the 10 hertz frequency. They call it a phantom sound. But our brain does this all the time. And what we found out in the 80s when I was with Light and Sound Research was, this doesn't only happen with our ears. It also happens with our eyes. So we've matched these two to create a superior experience of training the brain into what we call a synchronized brainwave or a symphony of brainwaves, because all five brainwaves that are the primary brainwaves, we need them all for different functions. So there's not a villain brainwave. There's just a brainwave that if they get out of balance, for instance, if you have too much beta, you might have anxiety, stress, and can't sleep. If you have too much alpha, you'd be a couch potato or a surfer, you know, either one, and you're not going to want to move and do things. So brainwaves are really important. So in the training of it, you pick out the brainwave that you want to train. For instance, in the morning, we have sessions where we train the brain to wake up. We call these digital coffee because they're going to excite the brain with more alpha activity and motivate the person to take action. In the middle of the day, when our temperature literally drops 2 degrees, because these bodies are designed for the Serengeti, it's time to go to sleep and take a nap, but we don't. But what we do with brain tap is in a 20-minute time period, we can do what we call a deep cycle reboot, a theta training, which is the threshold of sleep that very rarely do people get to, but we can train the brain to incorporate more theta, which is going to help people to have more lucid dreaming, to visualize better, to be more relaxed. And then at night, we can entrain the brain to go to sleep, because if the brain doesn't sleep well, then basically we don't function well the next day. So we need to get the deepest level sleep possible, also because deep level four sleep actually is what detoxes the brain. There's something called the glial lymphatic system. And if we don't activate that, we don't detox. And that's really important, especially if you're going through a treatment like trying to get rid of Lyme and things like that. We need to detox that brain so it can function at higher levels of efficiency.
Oh, I love that you brought it up. I'm going to come back to that later in the interview. I did hear you say before how the brain matches the environment. And I was sort of thinking about things like cuddling my dog and sitting next to a waterfall, watching a bonfire. So I'm imagining some of these brainwave frequencies help you get to that sort of a space too. Is that right?
Yeah, we did a study in Kansas City with bomb dogs.
Oh. And
I don't know if people realize this, but usually they have a life expectancy of only 3 years, which is pretty sad. But what we wanted to show them is when the handler would relax using brain tap, the dogs would relax. Your pets actually have a symbiotic relationship with you. And so the same way that you have with your pets. So that's why they have a lot of healing with horses and dogs and cats and all these kind of things, because our brain, there's something called the frequency following response. And actually every cell does this, but we're talking primarily about the brain now. So like when you're next to that fire and it's burning, that fire is crackling at 10 hertz frequency. That happens to be alpha. So your brain is going to immediately begin to create acetylcholine, which is one of the neurotransmitters that's there when you're falling in love. So when people say, I love a fire, well, that's because you're creating the chemical corresponding relationship within your body. And the same thing is true with those waves on the ocean or being near a big body of water like a lake or a moving body of water like a river or a creek or a waterfall. These are all things that trigger our own neurochemistry that cause us to feel good.
Oh, I love it. And then how do you incorporate breath work into the BrainTap technology? Because I did get my digital coffee this morning, so I am aware of some of the techniques that you use.
Yeah. Yeah. Part of it is most people, it's kind of hard to believe, but they don't know how to breathe, especially if they're in pain and discomfort. They don't breathe because what we tend to do is we tend to hold our breath because maybe that the in-breath will cause more pain, because we're triggering the sympathetic system. And when we breathe out, we're turning on the parasympathetic system. So it's really important that we do these conscious breath work. And inside of BrainTap itself, I'm guiding you through that. I'll say, hey, take a deep breath in, let it out slowly to the metal count of three. Or I might say, breathe into the metal count of four, breathe out to the metal count of eight. I'm going to guide you through some breathing exercises. We also have Pavel, who's one of our people. If you put in Pavel or breath work, we have over 40 sessions. And he's a world famous guy that we started doing some things because breath work is so important to brain function and to health of the body. When we look at people like there are people that can be injected with poisons and they breathe it out, like Wim Hof, you know, certain people like that that are documented that they can, through just breath work alone, can get their body to move into these super states of healing and vitality.
I first came across the BrainTap technology at the ILADS conference in Boston in 2019, the International Lyme and Associated Diseases Society. I'm wondering if you've had feedback from doctors about the benefits for Lyme patients.
Oh, yeah, we have quite a few doctors that have. We have a whole series on Lyme that one of our natural medicine practitioners had created, and we make that available to all the doctors. But what's nice about in the creativity of the medical community is that they're choosing the things that their patients need. And everything that happens to us, whether it's an accident, a trauma, or a toxin, or a thought, all these things have an emotional component. So regardless of what you're doing physiologically for them or what pills they're taking, what exercises they're doing, there needs to be some kind of brain fitness involved to engage the body in a healing cycle. Also, so when the body gets into that healing place, that's where that neuroplasticity comes in. So it can keep reproducing the healthy. We know now in science that it's not only an electrical system in our body, that we have a biophotonic system. And every 40 seconds, our genetics will upgrade or downgrade. That's every pair of genetic pathways that we have changes with light. It does it through the dura through the mitochondria itself. It's going to broadcast this information through the body. So if you want to show up as your best self, we want to eliminate stress from the equation. Stress turns on its own set of epigenetic markers that aren't healthy. So we want to make sure that we're in an open-minded, positive outlook on life and looking forward to healing and health and setting those expectations so the body's innate intelligence can go to work doing what it does best, which is to heal us.
That's incredible. We will make sure we share that resource in our podcast notes for our listeners as well. Do you have advice for people who are experiencing light sensitivity or seizures?
Yeah, I would not use the headset, the visor lights. The rest of your family could use them, but you would want to lift them up. We've never had a seizure, but you know, because it is flashing light, there's a small subset. About 10% of all epileptics will have photic expressions. Some people just can't handle light, the light intensity. We do use 470 nanometer light, which is a very low level light, very low penetration. It doesn't even penetrate the eyelid. So we've never triggered a seizure. So there's no problem with that. But it's just something that our insurance company, of course, wants us to tell people. But we have doctors that have tried to trigger seizures and hasn't happened. But what we want to make sure of is you can still get the same kind of results. It just takes a little bit longer if you use sound alone. We did a study in Australia, just finished up. We actually presented to the National Institute of Health, where we showed in 6 weeks with just using the app, we got a 70% improvement of sleep scores with coal miners who never see the light of day. And then, but if they used our headset, they got that same result in 3 weeks. Oh. So that's kind of what you're looking at. It's a little bit faster if you use the full light, sound, and vibration system, but you can do it with just the app alone.
Oh, that's incredible. And then I remember hearing something about, because there's the lights that go into the earphones. And is that something about because there's so many capillaries in our ears? Is that right?
Yes, that's part of it. There's your blood when it flows through the ears slows down. So what usually takes about 45 seconds for the blood to circulate through the body, it can take up to 4 minutes or more through the ears. So it's a great place for us to present light. And the light in the ears, when people look at it, they might go, that's pretty weird. But we're flashing that light in the different, every 2 minutes, it changes to a new nosier frequency that actually is speaking to the nervous system. Not the way we consciously listen, but it's speaking to it and turning off the sympathetic overload and turning on parasympathetic system. We developed it first for autistic children who couldn't understand the way you and I are talking right now, mm-hmm. but we wanted them to relax. So we created a frequency program that did it. We said, well, it's working so good for them. Let's use it for all these stressed out executives and people we work with. So we put it into the headset.
Oh, I love it. That's amazing. Now, you did mention astrocytes earlier, and I'm super fascinated with them. When I was doing research for this interview, I listened to a great Radiolab podcast about Dr. Li Wei-Tzu and her research to bring gamma back. And her research was showing that astrocytes in the brains of mice responded extremely well to gamma waves and actually improved brain function by about 50%. Have you seen results with gamma waves and cognition?
Yes, a lot. In fact, I've met with her. We had two meetings with her already.
Oh.
And we showed in her research shows that they get between 6 and 8% improvement of gamma. One brain tap session averages 21% improvement of gamma. So and even if you're not using gamma, what happens is there's two times when you cross a barrier of 10 cycles and 7.8 hertz, you get what we call gamma burst. Your brain actually will start regulating back. And that's, think of gamma like the bass drum. It keeps the band all in tune.
Okay.
And so that's the same with our brain. We need that gamma frequency. And unfortunately, as we get better looking and more intelligent with age, we get plaquing. That's the amyloid plaque she's talking about in breaking that down. And so kind of think of the old commercial when the guy was singing, break a glass. Well, that's what frequency does. So when we're pulsing the frequency at 40 hertz or higher, that's breaking down that amyloid plaque. And that's what she's showing. And then what happens is the brain then, we now know gamma has to do a lot with creativity, problem solving, also healing. It's kind of like a higher level theta. Some people call it the zone. Some athletes have been tracked at being at high levels of gamma while they're playing their sport, while they're having their peak performance moments. So we don't know a lot about gamma yet, but we have over 40 sessions in the brain tap that are gamma training. So we put them in there after meeting with Lu Tai and just kind of going over things.
Oh, that's great. Now, is there any research right now that you're really excited about?
We just wrapped up research that I'm super excited about from Brazil. We had the pharmaceutical college in Brazil actually take up it because we change so many neurotransmitters. We upregulate 54 different neurotransmitters and downregulate stress hormones that the head of the pharmaceutical college said, we want to do a study on this. He got a grant from the Brazilian government for $250,000. And it's just finishing up. They did three different research projects on pain because they wanted to use brain tap instead of opioids. And in all three studies, brain tap beat opioids as far as reducing pain and client compliance and function. So we're just putting that together. We're going to be publishing those papers. But they did three studies, which I thought was interesting because in the pharmaceutical world, they're hoping that one of them turns out good. All three of ours turned out to be in the favor of brain tap by a significant number. And we did those studies with only the app. So because they were bigger studies and we didn't have headsets that we wanted to just give out to, you know, a couple thousand people, we just used the app alone. So that proves that just using the app can really significantly improve brain function and reduce pain. If people are wondering, I'll just say, you only process pain or know that you're having it when you're in the high state of beta. So if we can lower that beta brainwave, we can reduce and even eliminate pain at times from people. And our study showed it works. You know, you can be pain free for about 90% of the people can be pain free for 24 hours if they just did one brain tap session a day.
Wow. And people can just find that on the app.
Yes. We have a pain-free lifestyle series.
Yeah. That's wonderful. Well, we'll definitely be following your research with that in Brazil. That sounds absolutely extraordinary and great to hear that that you're making such a big difference.
Well, yeah, we're excited. I mean, I just had a published paper on breathwork that published with PubMed just 2 days ago as well. So we're trying to prove out that you can do these things on your own, but they just take a lot of effort. You know, most people aren't going to do all the breath exercises they need to do, so they can use the app or they can use the headset.
But I think eventually your body craves more of that too, doesn't it?
Yes. Yeah. Well, it's just like exercise. Once you get in the routine of exercise, your body will actually feel worse if you don't exercise and you're missing that. Not only the dopamine hit, but, you know, just the endorphin release of being there working out your brain and body.
And then are there other ways people can use that technology? I know you did mention pain and stress. I just was wondering if you might highlight a little bit more how that works.
Yeah, we have 43 different ways that our clinics are using it around the world. Some of the major ones are like for sleep disorders, we have a better sleep program. We have a mind over menopause program. We have a stress-free childbirth. We have a football program. We have a tennis program. We have a lot with sports because we deal a lot with professional athletes. We have, you know, so we have the different sports in the program as well. Golf our golf program. We actually presented that study also to NIH because we have the Seminole College who we work with. Three-time national champions now. And what we showed was that while they're using the brain tap for sports, they were the number one GPA in the school of any sports team. So we help them with their grades. And we have a lot of different studies on improving grades and things of that nature that we work because my first book was called Awaken the Genius. It's all about awakening the brain. And I think everybody has genius potential. It just has to be activated.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for your time. It is such an inspiration to actually get the chance to speak with you, and we will be following your work and love to have you back again to speak to us more about breath work and the research in Brazil.
Sure, we'd love to. Just let us know. We'll be there.
What an incredible interview. That was fascinating to learn about how binaural beats create a phantom sound in our brains and how breath work can put us in a state of healing. Thank you for listening and stay safe in the outdoors.
Wandering Rhythms, Mondays from noon to two.
Join us in a weekly sample of music from planet Earth.
The strangest mixtape you will ever hear.
Desert blues.
Balkan punk.
Latin funk.
African psych.
Pigeon rap.
And anything and everything else you can imagine, equally represented by all continents.
Because good music is universal.
Wandering Rhythms.
Mondays at noon on CJSF 90.1 FM.
And Wandering Rhythms will be up in just over an hour, up at 12 noon. First up, though, before that, at 11 will be Democracy Now, coming to you as it does every Monday through Friday at 11 o'clock, so stay tuned for that. We have some music for you now. This is Status Non-Status from their EP released at the beginning of January. The EP is actually called January 3rd, which, not surprising, is when it was launched. And also the title track is called January 3rd. But we're going to play a track called Glide. Status Non-Status used to be, was formerly a band called Whoopzoo, who have many releases in their catalog. And they are from Ontario. So, Status Non-Status, Glide from their EP January 3rd.
Protecting me every night. a crying shame, I sigh, a sign that she's still unheard. I know you're here, she says, in fear when it takes my breath. From me, it restores yours when it takes my breath. From me, it restores yours when it takes my breath. From it when I change, they can never let me be a stranger. Liken it to falling from a tree, like I'm in some kind of danger.
Half Gringa and a track called Some Curse. Fairly new on our playlist here at CJSF. I like that one. Just before that, we heard from Status Non-Status and a track called Glide from their EP January 3rd. If you're looking for some stuff to do over the coming weeks, I have a couple good suggestions for you. I'll Be Your Mirror is third-year visual arts student's presentation at the Audain Gallery at the SFU Goldcorp Center for the Arts. It's taking place March 30th, starting this weekend, or this Thursday, and running to April 8th. It is a... School for Contemporary Arts third-year visual arts students are presenting in collaboration with Koto Izawa, who is the Spring 2013 Audain Visual Artist in Residence. In this exhibition, Art and Mirrors explore generative and long-lasting relationships through reflection, refraction, reenactment, repetition, echoes, and mise en abyme. Not even sure what that term means, but I'm sure if you go to the exhibition, you'll find that out and a lot more. While the exhibition is grounded in the idea of mirrors, the physical presence of mirrors is not presented in the exhibition. So it sounds very interesting. All this is happening at SFU Goldcorp Center for the Arts, starting this Thursday, March 30th, and running to April 8th. These are always really interesting exhibitions because, of course, they're art students, and they are really trying to make an impression both on you of course, they're instructors. So there's always a lot of really interesting, provocative work to be found there. Coming up on Easter weekend, April 15th and 16th. No, that's after Easter, isn't it? Anyway, I should look at my calendar, perhaps. Sakura Days is the Sakura Days Japan Fair, part of the Vancouver Cherry Blossom Festival. Is taking place at the Van Dusen Botanical Garden. It'll provide Japanese food, performances, arts, and culture. Look forward to taiko drumming, theater performances, woodworking demonstrations, and a renewed Japanese garden display. Immerse yourself in Japanese culture, food, and art. You can also participate in a traditional Japanese tea ceremony and learn some Japanese games and crafts. If you're interested in learning about the culture, here's your place. April 15th and 16th, Sakura Days Japan Fair is happening at Van Dusen Botanical Gardens. For more information, check out the Vancouver Cherry Blossom Festival website at vcbf.ca. And then you just look for more information about the festival. And in fact, there's a lot of stuff happening during the festival. That's just one of many events happening throughout the early part of April. So really check out the website and see all the cool things you can be getting up to.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. In 2017, Hurricane Maria devastated the coastal town of Luisa in Puerto Rico. A local nonprofit stepped up to support disaster relief efforts, and they started by talking to women.
We women are leading communities. Women are taking care of kids. Women are taking care of elder, bedridden people.
That's Jennifer De Jesus Soto of Tire Salud, a nonprofit focused on women's health and violence reduction. She says because women are often caretakers, they frequently know who is most vulnerable and what their communities need in an emergency. So Tire Salud partnered with women on the ground to distribute food, water, infant formula, and medicine. The group helped set up community kitchens where people could get hot meals and access mental health services, reproductive health supplies, and other support. De Jesus Soto says the lessons they learned during Maria prepared them to respond during Hurricane Fiona this past fall. The team was able to ramp up relief efforts quickly, so women on the ground had the resources they needed to help themselves and others.
When you invest in women, you are investing in the whole community also.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To hear more stories like this, visit climateconnections.org.
And that's pretty much our show for today. Thank you for tuning in to Speak Up for this Monday, March 27th. My name is Magnus Tewald. I've been your host for this hour. I will be back next Monday with another edition of Speak Up with our regular feature, What's Happening, What's Up in Burnaby. Coming up today on CJSF, in just a few moments, you'll be listening to Democracy Now! And up at noon, Nick Legacy and Wandering Rhythms will be bringing you music from around the world, along with his special national or regional music feature. Up at 12 noon is Generic Alternative with Alex Morris. And at 3 p.m., typically Tuesday, with Leslie and Jade. Thanks for tuning in today. Speak Up will be back tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock sharp with Vivian Frindle. So please stick around. Come back for that. Up in just a few minutes is Democracy Now! Kota Koenig and Idle Hands taking us to the top of the hour. Thanks for listening.